The shiur was sponsored by Joshua Menaster in loving memory of his father, Pinchas Eliezer ben Yaakov Yosef, on his yurt site. Joshua is somebody who somehow found me during COVID when he was stuck at home. And he I guess he was listening to shiur on YU, and he found my shiur, and he said that I became his constant companion, other than his wife, and during COVID, and he very much wanted to sponsor the shiur today. Okay, I'm going to do what I think rabbis have been doing for generations, and that's on Thursday practice their Shabbat HaGadol talk, which actually makes a great deal of sense because you put a lot of effort and time into it. So it doesn't make so much sense to just give it one time. So you may as well at least give it a couple of times. Anyway, what I decided that I wanted to talk about this year was Charoset. And the reason was very simply because hardly anybody ever talks about Charoset. That's one part of it. The other part of it is that over the years I've talked about Matzah, and I've talked about Mar, and I've talked about Korach. So all the eating parts, which is really the main thing that interests people, has been covered. So the other elements of the Seder, Sipur Tzir Mitzrayim, and so on. So obviously I've talked about that. So this is really a process of elimination. I was looking for something that I hadn't spoken about. So that's how we're here. So it's very interesting in terms of the recipes. When I first started thinking about the topic, I did think about the recipes, and there's a lot more to it than you would imagine. And the recipes are actually going to be a function of various things. One part will be a practical part in terms of how you understand what it is. The second part is going to be a theological issue in terms of understanding what it is. And the third part is going to be a practical part based upon where you live and what was available to you. And it also has to do with a little bit with imagination. And we'll leave that for now. Hopefully I'll get to some of those things. But we will note along the way that there are not just different recipes. there's probably a larger difference, at least in my mind, whether all the ingredients are just combined together or they're actually cooked. So therefore, the Rambam, for example, describes that it needs to be cooked. But as I said, I'm getting ahead of myself somewhat. The Mishnah in the 10th chapter of Psachim, which means we're towards the end of the Masechta, tells us the following. Hiviu lefanav mitabel b'chazeret ad shemagia leparparat hapat. Hiviu lefanav matzah v'chazeret v'charoset u'shnei tafshilin afo pisha enu charoset mitzvah b'leze b'rabit sadok omer mitzvah u'v'mikdash hayu mevin lefanav gufo shel Pesach. So this part of the Mishnah describes what's taking place during the Seder, and you're bringing certain things in front onto the table, and most of these things I would assume that we recognize. We recognize the matzah and the mar and the chareset and then the two tafshilin, and in the time of the Beit HaMikdash they would bring the Korban Pesach as well. But in the middle over here there was this comment about the chareset. And we're told that we bring the charoset. Now you can ask why you bring the charoset. I mean, which means it almost should be what one could call an either or. Either you're dealing something which is obligatory, or you're dealing something which is not obligatory. If it's not obligatory, then why is it there? If it's obligatory, so then what exactly is the nature of this obligation? So when it talks of bringing these things, we know that matzah, we know about mar, we know about, you know, these various elements. The shnei tafshilin, by the way, take the place of the Korban Pesach and the Korban Chagiga. So we know what those things are doing there, but then it says, but even though charoset is not a mitzvah, we bring it anyway, so now of course the question is going to be, why? And then, perhaps a more surprising opinion is, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadok says, mitzvah, that it is a mitzvah. Now, if it is a mitzvah, what are the possible implications of that? And of course, we want to know, how does he know it's a mitzvah? I mean, generally, mitzvah we can figure out. The other thing is, when he says it's a mitzvah, what is he thinking about? Is he thinking about it's a mitzvah from the Torah, or is he thinking about it's a mitzvah midrabanan? If it is a mitzvah from the Torah, is it a mitzvah called a mitzvah chiyuvis or mitzvah kiyumis? Is there a specific obligation to do this? Or does this help fulfill a mitzvah along the way? Just for example, if, by the way, what I'm saying now is very unconvincing. Let's just say that part of the mitzvah is to tell the story, and somehow the charoset could be used to tell the story, then I can say, oh, the charoset is a mitzvah because it's a way to tell the story. But as I said, I hope that you realize that's very unconvincing. The Tosefta very much echoes this Mishnah. Ha-matzvah chazeret v'charoset afo pisha ein charoset mitzvah. B'lezer b'rabbi tzadok omer mitzvah. B'mikdash mevim lefanav gufo shel Pesach. Now, you realize in both of these places it did the same thing. It talked about what was brought in front, and then it talks about that time when the Beit HaMikdash still existed and how the Korban Pesach itself was brought. And one of the things that we should be wondering, at least in the back of our minds, is it just that telling us the sequence, or maybe there's more of a connection here than we would normally note. The Tosefta, however, continues another line, and it tells us something else. He mentioned to all of the guys from Lud who owned bastot in the shuk, who owned stalls in the shuk, and he said to them, come and buy the ingredients which are a mitzvah in order to create the charoset. So not only did he believe that the charoset mitzvah, he was actually publicizing it. Actually, it's a little bit better than you would think. It was pointed out by one of the commentaries on the Yerushalmi, Rav Tamar, and he notes what he sent me to in source number 3, Tani Masibur Rabbi Lozabur Tzaduk Vav Shul Ben Bitin Shahoyu Chan Vanim Yerushalayim. Lozabur Ben Tzaduk himself had a stall in Machane Yehuda, or something like that. And so when he was telling the guys some Lud, he was saying, no, you guys need to buy this stuff that I'm selling. It wasn't just, so I know some of you are going to say that this is a little self-interest. Not only did he own a stall, the Tosefta continues along those lines in source 4 and says, Omer Lov, Lez ben Tzaduk, Va'ab Shol ben Bitnit, Shol Yuchan Venim Yushalayim Kol Yimei Chayehim. This was not just something that he did at one point. No, his whole life, that's what he did. He worked in the shuk. He had his stall, and presumably he sold spices. And when he sold his spices, he had a very good, you know, they always call out saying different things when they're selling the spices. Over here, he called out and said, come, buy these spices, because this is the mitzvah, because charoset is actually a mitzvah. If you want, you can say the other way around. The reason he became a spice seller in the shuk was in order to make sure that everybody would go and purchase their charoset, which was a mitzvah. So it is really interesting how these things go together. Let's go to the Rambam now and just see how the Rambam processes some of what we've seen. Source number 5. Haseidu shu mashmiachak kachu. Now, this is the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah. So he's commenting on the Mishnah that we just now read, telling us that you bring these things and there's an opinion that charoset is a mitzvah. So he says, Yavil lefanav shulchan v'kadesh kamo sha'am, v'achach yochal eze yerek, right? We should all know that. I think we've done this one or two times. She yizdamein acharei shebul b'charoset. And that vegetable, now it's funny because most of us will dip that into salt water. So he's saying, no, that vegetable, you dip that into charoset, which itself is somewhat interesting. And again, we have charoset radar today. I mean, that's all that we're looking for. V'yavarech lev bar pradama. Va'amar mitabel b'chazeret. And some say that actually, that the dipping is with the chazeret, is with the, we'll call it the mor later on, kadesh lashmecha shebore pri adama mevorech afilo ala chazeret shehimin amarim shebemalkom yereko ochla b'tchila aval kishiyochal amatzah v'chazeret achar kach mevorech ala chila maror im lo achal maror tchila. So you say an adami here, but later on you'll say the bracha on the mor, unless you had the mor initially. And he's getting more complicated than we need to get to, because this doesn't concern us. Although the Rambam here is very focused on the problem. And this, you know, is like a side point with the Seder. All the brachot issues are a problem. All the bori priya guffins. And when do you say bracha achrona? And with the vegetables and so on. So you can give a whole shiur just on hilchot brachot with the Seder, but that gets lost in all other things that we do. So I'm just pointing out that the Rambam is concerned with that part of it as well. He continues and he says, that nonetheless there needs to be some kind of vegetable and dipping in the beginning. That some things that we're doing in order to do things different, in order to arouse questioning. That the word mitabel is similar to mitapel. By the way, this is a translation to Hebrew back from the Arabic, so let's not get excited one or the other. V'acharoset, this is our main part, which is in bold, hopefully. V'acharoset ta'arovet sheyesh b'chamitzut. So now, those of you interested in recipes, he's telling us that it needs to have an element. You want to call, how do you want to translate chamitzut? Savory sours, we want sour. Interesting, not tartness. I just would have said tart. I mean, I'm right? So the word is chamitzut. Chamitzut is actually pretty similar to chametz, which is interesting. Something becomes... There's a process over there But over here, I'm going to use the word tartness because I think it's better than savory sour. I think it's more to the point, and I apologize, which is always a problem when you have a recipe and you're trying to replace things and so on. And over here, it's he told us something that we didn't know. V'acharosa ta'arova t'sheish b'chamitzut u'ke'en teven zecher latit. So over here, he's right away given us some information, which again, perhaps we didn't know, but he's telling us that this should remind us, there should be an association over here, that when we're eating the charoset, it needs to remind us of the mortar. Now, the mortar is something which, you know, we built, we used this, the raw materials, in order to make and to build whatever it was that we were building. So we didn't get to consistency yet, but what he's saying is that this itself represents something which is heavy. But when I say heavy, I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about the memory of something which was difficult, something which was painful. And therefore, by the way, for that to have not a sweetness to it is also, it could be that the recipe over here is reflecting what, I said this in the beginning. I don't know if you heard when I said it. I said that part of it is going to be how you understand what the purpose of it or the theology is then going to dictate what it is that you're making. So over here, if I'm saying that this represents the mortar is not a happy time of the Seder. Look, we were working. We were slaves. There's something which is very difficult. So again, I want to read a little bit more, keeping in mind both the recipe, the practical, what we're making, how we're making it, and on the other hand, what we're trying to convey with this. V'acharosa ta'arovet sheyesh b'chamitzut u'ke'en teven zecher latit. It has within it I don't want to say bitter, but a tartness, and it should be kind of like the materials which are being used in order to make the mortar. V'kach anachnu osim ota, and this is what we do. Shirim te'enim otmarim. Now, by the way, those are both sweet. Those are both things which are quite sweet. U'mevashlim otam. Now we're back to the cooking over here. So that you take these things and you cook them. V'diken otam, this is kind of you crush or smash it. Ad sheyitrakchu v'lashin ota b'chometz. And now you've added into it vinegar. V'notnim b'tocho sanbal, which is most likely ginger. O karnit o ezov b'li shechika. And Rav Tzadok omer charoset mitzvah. Chayav l'dato l'varech. And if it's a mitzvah, then according to his opinion, the Rambam is projecting, you should say a bracha. Asher kiddushan b'tzotav v'tzivano ala chilat charoset. Ve'enu halacha. But the law is not according to Reb Ben Tzadok, so we don't do that. But again, he just wants you to understand the implication. If this were a mitzvah, then it should be no different from the other mitzvot. There's a mitzvah to eat maror, we make a bracha on the maror. There's a mitzvah to eat the matzah, we make a bracha ala chilat matzah. So therefore, if this is a mitzvah as well, then there should be a bracha over here. So it is interesting that the Rambam in the back of his head, or you can say maybe not in the back of his head, in all of this section, is he is concerned about the brachot element of the Seder. So this is a good place to start if anybody's interested in that topic. But he also just throws this out along the way. Well, if you think it's a mitzvah, then you really need to make a bracha as well. Now, Tosfot is going to take us in a completely different direction. And I do want to point out that I'm doing something a little bit unfair by going to the Rambam and to the Tosfot, and I kind of skipped over one thing which was really important, and that was the Gemara. So to know what the Gemara has to say about this would be significant as well, but I just wanted to make sure that we understand how clearly the Rambam is on one side of this, on what this is all about, and now we'll see how clearly Tosfot is on another side of this. But give me a second. That part of the issue over here is going to be availability, where you live and when you live and so on. And I'm not getting that much into that, clearly. And we'll see a much more issue involved in that later on, which will actually be counter to everything that you're thinking right now. But give me a couple of seconds to get there. Tosfot, on the other hand, says, Afal pi she'ein charoset mitzvah, that we believe that it's not a mitzvah, ve'im tomar, amai lo ati charoset d'rishut, umavatel chazeret d'mitzvah. Now, if we're going to conclude that it's not a mitzvah, how can I take the maror and dip it into the charoset? It's a mitzvah to me eat maror. How am I allowed to dilute the maror? The maror is a mitzvah to eat. How can I eat maror together with charoset? That should not be allowed to do. Meaning, if you said charoset's a mitzvah, then I'm allowed to do mitzvah. Then I can come to the question, why am I doing it together? Okay, there may be a very good answer to that. But if maror is a mitzvah and charoset's not a mitzvah, how are you allowed to dilute the taste of the maror? That's the question that he asks. More importantly, will be the answer that he says. V'yesh lomar, t'kivin d'kol ikar maror lo nitaken rak b'tibul b'charoset mishum kapa. Now he introduced a new word to us, and that's kapa. Lo mikri b'tul b'kach. No, the whole institution of eating maror was to do it with a dipping in the charoset because of kapha. Now, you have no idea what kapha is, and by the way, what kapha is itself going to be a whole side question to everything else that we're dealing with now. But he's saying, no, that is exactly what the obligation is. Now, there is something interesting about this, because I could have said to Tosot, if Tosot was sitting here, I mean, presumably Tosot is based upon the Ri. The Ri was one of the first one really to commit Tosot to writing, or one of the later great ones could be Rabbeinu Peretz and others, because very often they're anonymous, we don't know who's speaking. But let's just say it's the Ri HaZaken. Ri HaZaken was Rashi's great-grandson, Rabbeinu Tan's nephew. But he was the one who actually first committed Tosot to writing. And I would say to him, what are you talking about, with all due respect? It says, Al Matzot Umurim Yochlu. Don't tell me the whole takana of eating maror together with, what are you talking about? It says in the Torah that you eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror, right? You should remember Hillel now, right? Putting them all together. So what are you saying? No, that's the whole takana. And it's very interesting as well. Dekol ikamaror lo nitaken. So he's talking about the rabbinic obligation. By the way, bizman hazeh, today, eating maror is drabanan. The bizman hazeh, eating matzah, is a Torah law. Why is maror a rabbinic law today? Because there's no Korban Pesach. So he's saying that when they instituted eating the maror, they instituted eating the maror together with charoset because of kapha. And since that is the rabbinic law which was created, therefore there's no problem with the dilution, because that's exactly what they said you need to do. Now, hopefully we are now sufficiently confused. So let's continue now. What now we have to know, what's kapha? Exactly. See how easy that is? Now, so if we look at source number 7 is the Gemara. Now, there's more than one Gemara that we're going to look at. And it's like one page after the other. Now, as much as we have our problem with brachot, there's this whole other problem that takes place on the Seder night, and that is when you wash and why you wash and why you wash for what you wash, if that made any sense, which means in the beginning of the meal, we're washing for vegetables. Why are we washing vegetables? We never wash for vegetables. In the time when the Beit HaMikdash stood, and there was such a thing as Tuma and Tahara, and there are certain ways that Tuma can go from one place to the other, there were certain considerations, which actually is really interesting, that we're behaving on the first part of the Seder as if the Beit HaMikdash is still standing. I don't know if the average person really understands that that's what's going on, because presumably the reason we're doing it now is just to get kids to ask. But it's still, nonetheless, we're doing something to get this inquisitiveness going. But on the other hand, what we're doing is something which is really quite authentic. So it's not just like some random thing, oh, let me stand on my head to get someone to ask why you're standing on your head. No, we're doing something which really was the way things were done back in the day. And now the Gemara is asking, hold it. We know that you're supposed to wash, essentially Tuma travels with liquids. So over here, if there's going to be a liquid, right, so theoretically, if you were time the Beit HaMikdash, you have an apple, you would want to dry the apple before you eat it. If it's still wet, then you have a problem if there's tumah on your hands, that the tumah is going to be able to move on. Liquids can move on tumah. So over here, the Gemara, that's going to be the backdrop of the Gemara. Amar v'lez Amar Abishaya, kol shetiblu b'mashke, when something is dipped into something which is liquid, sarach l'tihil edayim. Then there is this institution, need l'tihil edayim. Why? In order to make sure that the tumah, which may be there, is not going to travel. Amar of Papa, shma mina, we learn from this, hay chasa. Now, chasa, we know, is one of the, from the Mishnah, it's one of the things you can use as mar. So chasa, let's just even assume chasa's lettuce, which, by the way, takes us to a whole other problem. What exactly is bitter? I hope some of you know that it's very doubtful that any Tana ever, or previously, ever tasted horseradish, because simply horseradish didn't grow in that part of the world. And horseradish, I don't know if it's bitter. It's sharp. I don't know if it's bitter. So again, it goes back. You want to play with terms in terms of taste. But I'm saying, horseradish, even though we grew up on it, yeah, that's a bitter herb. That's what it is. So, yeah, the Gemara is on the saying chasa. So chasa, especially the stalk of it, can have a slight bitterness to it, but that's bitter as opposed to being really sharp. So, again, there really is a difference over here. Hai chasa, regarding the maror or the lettuce, tzarech l'shakue b'charoset. You need to dip it into the charoset, mishum kapa. Now, the Gemara says, the l'shakue, if you say you didn't need to dip it in, then why would you need to wash? Because there's no liquid involved in this. It also makes the charoset sound a little bit more liquidy than maybe we would imagine. And he says, what's the problem? Holo naga. Vidum la'olam e'malach. Maybe you can always say, lo tzirich la'shakoy. You don't have to dip it in. But kafa me'recha mayit. And the kafa or the kappa dies from the smell, the fumes. The fumes coming off the charoset are killing the kappa. Maybe, so he said, the Gemara says, no, it dies. Now, if it dies, that really gives you the impression that it was previously alive. The question is, if living or dying over here is literal, or living or dying over here is something which is figurative, which means there are those who want to take this all figuratively and saying what we're dealing with is the sharpness of the maror, and it's too sharp, so then how do you deal with the sharpness, so you deal it with the charoset. Now, it's very very difficult to understand that just the smell of it can actually somehow treat it. Now, maybe some of you actually believe in aromatherapy or such things, and somehow this is going to impact it. On the other hand, if you just turn the page for a second, the source on the bottom of the page says the Aruch. The Aruch is an ancient dictionary. So I actually, to make it look more authentic, I brought you a picture of it. So going under kuf pei, kapa, kafa, it calls it tola'at shebiyerek, some kind of infestation which is inside some vegetables. So yes, you're told you need to clean your lettuce for bugs and so on. The implication from the Aruch is that the problem with the lettuce is that the lettuce may have bugs in it. So if the lettuce has bugs in it, you have to kill it. So then you put it in this mixture. By the way, that would be very difficult. That night, we happen to be eating vegetables. So if you're eating vegetables, so what do you need to do? You need to treat, right? We're talking right now about Pesach. So now you have a vegetable in your hand that may have, according to what the Aruch says, may have a bug on it. So therefore, you put it, even the smell of this stuff is going to chase away this bug. Now, whether this bug is kosher or not kosher, because if the bug is not, or dangerous or not, I mean, you realize that this could take us in so many directions. This can easily turn into a whole discussion about bugs, which we don't want to have. And if it did fall into the charoset, then how can you help it? Unless this is saying you dip it in and then you shake it off, and you don't eat this, because, and then you hopefully got rid of all of your, you got rid of, and then hopefully you got rid of all of your kappa, kaffa, or whatever it may be. But we're still trying to understand this. V'kaffa mirecha mayit, ela lama li natil adayim, they don't have to wash. Dilma mishakule, v'amarf papa lo nishau inish mora b'charoset. Dilma agav chalye detavle mevatale lemorere. And then at the very end, just to make everything really good, the Gemara actually will give us, well, you know what, we're going to pause. I just want you to realize that there is this discussion over here. The Gemara is dealing with the side point, but it got to our copy. This is not the main Gemara, which is why we really want to look at source number 9. If you look at the rest of the entry in the dictionary, you'll find there some other opinions. But in source number 9, the Gemara says, "Afo pisha ein charosa mitzvah." So now we're dealing with the main issue, the main question, and then the Gemara asks the question that obviously should be asked: "V'i lo mitzvah mishumai maitila." If it's not a mitzvah, what's it doing on the table? Why is it here? Meaning, we have enough things we need to do the Seder night. Why are we playing around with this? Amar Rabbi Ami mishum kappa, and now we're back to our kappa again. Amar Rav Asi. Kappa dechasa chama. The way to solve your kappa problem is with radishes. Radishes will get rid of the kappa, but you just don't know what kappa is, which is good. Kappa dechama karti. And the way to get rid of the kappa from radishes is with karti. And kappa de karti chamime, that's hot water. Kappa de kulu chamime. No, you can get rid of all kappa by hot water. Hot water will remove any kind of kappa that you have, and you don't have to worry about it. Adahachi v'hachi ne'mahachi, and then it gives you a incantation you can say to get rid of your kappa, just in case we haven't gone far enough. Kappa, kappa dekrina lach u'lashav benatayich latamni kalatach, which is now over here. This translation is from Rabbi Steinsaltz, and he understands kappa as poison, as eres, eres, eres. Zochera niotach v'et sheva benotayach v'et shmona kalotayach. Kappa, I knew you and your seven daughters and your eight daughters-in-law, and that somehow makes the kappa disappear. So now you got far more than you ever imagined going down the charoset rabbit hole, and now you found yourself either in a world full of, well, you can easily see how you can make a psychedelic movie on this. You have all of your bugs on the one hand, and you have your poison on the other hand. You have your incantation to say. Now the Gemara backs up and says, hold on a second. My mitzvah. What is the mitzvah here? Because if we got lost along the way, the Rambam gave us one reason, and we don't know yet how the Rambam got there. Tosfot said, what are you talking about? Only reason we eat the charoset is because of the kappa on the mar. And then we went through our whole kappa sideshow over here. But why is it talking? Essentially, it's asking, why is it on the table? It's on the table because of kappa, which means it's not a mitzvah. It's something which is very practical. Now, as much as you're going to tell me, well, what happened all year round they have the same problem if they ate these things. If you eat these things, there's a problem. One side of this seems to be taking us much more towards perhaps an infestation. Another side may be taking us towards, it could be unhealthy, it could be something poisonous, something which is really bad for you, which then you can ask, well, why are we eating it? Which maybe people every year ask, why are we eating Marer? This cannot be all that good for me. Right, so all of this should now be interesting, but the entire path we've been taking now, ever since we left the Rambam and went back to our Tosfot world, which now we see clearly was backed by the Gemara in a couple of places, and that is, there's no mitzvah involved in this. There's a practical usage. What's the practical use? Well, that depends exactly what it is, and what it is depends on who you ask. Something which is dangerous or something, an infestation. But now the Gemara says, but hold it a second. Rav Elazar ben Rav Tzadok, remember him? Rav Elazar ben Tzadok, who had the stole and the shuk, he said, no. This is a mitzvah. So what exactly is the mitzvah? So Reb Lezman Tzadik Omer mitzvah, my mitzvah. Reb Levi Omer, Reb Levi explains Reb Lezman of Tzadik, and he says, Zecher l'tapuach. This helps us remember the tapuach, which of course all you should be saying, what tapuach? Good. Reb Yochan Omer Zecher l'tit, that no, it should remind us of the mortar. Now this is where we started with the Rambam. The Rambam told us that this is really about mortar, so now you see where the Rambam got this from. So apparently, be very careful now, apparently the Rambam was following this, and the mortar, just at face value, is easier to understand than anything else till now, that it's part of the narrative of the story of the Jews in Egypt, that they were using raw materials, they were making mortar, they were building, they were enslaved. This represents the slavery, which is really interesting, because I'm going to say it again, for us, very often, the ingredients of the charoset is sweet, and it takes away the sting of the marah, it gives a little bit of sweetness, but on the other hand, maybe thematically, it's far more connected to the marah than we would have thought. Because the marah is something which should itself be stinging, right? Reminding us of the slavery. And now the charoset reminds us of the slavery because this is exactly what we needed to do. So therefore it takes us back to the processing of the building that we were doing. Hold on to that for a second. Tanya kavati Rav Yochanan Amar Abaye. So Abaye heard these two opinions, one zecher l'tapuach and one zecher l'tit. Amar Abaye hilkach, therefore, tzorech l'kahuye, therefore, we need to do two things, which apparently Abaye says we follow both of those opinions. Now, you don't know what those two things are yet. Lekahuye means to put something in that will make it tart. That's where the tartness comes from. We need to, by the way, you can kind of wonder also how similar Kahuye is, lekahe et shinav, you know, to the Rashi, lekahe et shinav, because it sounds like a very similar type of word. That means to blunt. But over here, this means that you need to, right, if you look at Rashi, Lekahuye, it's in the next couple of lines over here. Let's just look at Rashi in source 10 for a second. Mishum kappa, saraf hachazeret kasha, v'yesh bo eris. This is really the sting of the mar, and there's some kind of eris there. Eris normally would be some kind of a poison. Kapa de chasachama, so misha ochel chazeret v'chela b'shvil kapa yochel tznon v'yurapeh. So it's medicinal. Kapa de chama karti, and how do you heal from tznon? Misha ochel tznon v'kashelo yochel karti. Chamime yishte mayim chamim. Kapa de kul chamime Eres shokol yirakot chamin rofe lehem. So now, let's pause there for a second. Three lines later in the Rashi, likahuye, latil bo tapuchim v'yayin, umilta de'it be'kiyuha. So he's saying you need to put things, now he says like an apple and like wine, in order to, now to do something. By the way, just before we go too far in the apples, you do know there are lots of different types of apples. Some apples have sweetness, other apples are tart. Right, so what exactly is he imagining? But I want to go keep one finger there on Rashi, but go back to the Gemara, because what is it that Abaye says? Abaye says we need to do both. L'kayhuye u'samach l'samoche. Tzarech lasota chamutza, v'tzarech lasota smicha. Smicha, I'm in the Gemara in Source 9, three lines before the bottom of that Gemara. Abaye says you need to do both. That means that in terms of ingredients, there needs to be something which is chamutz, tart. In terms of the body, it needs to be thick. So we're dealing with, why? To remind me of making the mortar. So therefore, Abaye is telling me those two things, I need to do both. I need to follow that apple, and I'm going to say probably more bitter type of or tart type of apple on the one hand, and there are those who actually understood apple and then very quickly moving towards apple vinegar or apple cider vinegar, which itself becomes much more interesting. And on the other hand, what you do with this tartness is then you go and create something which is going to be a thick kind of a thing, because then it's going to remind you of the mortar which they made. And we need to do both of them, because these are not mutually exclusive. This is both part of the same narrative. But now you realize the charoset becomes something which has many elements to it, far more than I think that we imagined before we begin. And I didn't even get to the good part yet. So hold on a second. And then the Gemara ends up with something that you already know. Let's say we did a baye. That you also put some kind of tavlin inside, which should remind you of the tevin. Now, what exactly you need to put in, he doesn't tell us, and the charoset should remind us, as we've already seen now, of the mortar. And this is charuch, and this is how the people who worked in the shuk used to yell out, Shib Yushalayim. They would say, Bo tlu lachem tavlin lemitzvah. Come, buy yourselves the spices and whatever in order to be able to do the mitzvah. So again, what would the mitzvah be? The mitzvah is, it's part of the narrative. The mitzvah is that here is maybe more than any other thing, is the way of people re-experiencing and feeling and communicating that part of the slavery that they were doing and the building process they were doing with the charoset. So how do I look at charoset? On the one hand, I'm looking at charoset as being something very, very pragmatic and practical to get rid of whatever the kappa is. And on the other hand, I can look at it as something which is an intrinsic part of telling over the story. Okay. So, and I'm skipping, just to let you know what I skipped, and so you don't have to tell me I skipped. I skipped, what in the world does it have to do with the apple? What apple are we talking about? So I know that all of you already suspect that apple must be from the tree of knowledge, because everyone knows that was an apple. And you think I'm, and all of you think I'm kidding. Okay. Of course. Now, if you look at source number 11, the riff, and at this point, all that we're interested in, the riff, by the way, does a couple of things. First of all, generally the riff is, he takes the Gemara, and he takes all the irrelevant parts, sorry for saying that, and he cuts them out. That's not my fault, it's what he did. So essentially, if the Gemara goes on long and long tangents, he only leaves the part which is really to the point. If you actually learn through, let's say, a whole Gemara, then you want to do Chazara, the best way to review what's the bottom line is just to learn the riff. The riff is around a third of the size of the Gemara, because it only leaves the third, which it thinks is really... Rav Lichtenstein told me once, he goes, that's the best way to review. Best way to review is just go through the riff after you learn whatever you learn. Now, as I said, generally the riff is cutting and pasting, or actually cutting. He's just cutting a lot out and leaving in a lot. But every now and again, he'll tell you something which he knows by tradition or his understanding. And over here, he added in something which is interesting. And he says, he brings Abaye, which means that's his bottom line. We need to do both. That's the conclusion. right? Afapisha in charosa mitzvah, Rabbi Lezman Sadduk on mitzvah, my mitzvah, zechel tapuach, pirish, tachet tapuach. Now that's really interesting because he brings an interesting verse, which the Gemara didn't bring. Rashi brings it. So hold on to that for a second. We'll come back. Under the apple tree. So whatever happened under the apple tree, hold on. This is not the Andrew sisters or whatever. So just wait for that for a moment. Rav Yochanan Amar Zechel Letit Amar Abaye Hilchach Sarach Lekahuye V'Tzarach Lesamuche. So he says, therefore, the conclusion is we really need to do both. Tani Kavat to Rav Yochanan Tavlin Zechel Letevin Pirish Kigon Kinaman V'Sanbal. So he's saying actually to put cinnamon sticks inside because that's going to remind you of the Tevin which was there. So again, it's the ingredients in the it's what is trying in the service of telling you the narrative. So the charoset becomes something which is incredibly dynamic, and he was shehin domin l'tevin charoset zeichel l'tit. So you want there both the tevin and the tit because you want the raw materials, and then you want the border as well. And then he tells us over at Elizabeth Sadduk that he would tell people, "Come take your spices to do the mitzvah." So how bad are we right now in terms of time? Only on page 2, the Beit Yosef over here is l'kahuye. He writes, Latiobo Tapuchim Viyayin, to make it chamutz. The kahuye means to make it chamutz. So now how do you want to translate that? To make it tart. So how do you, to make it tart, you put apples and wine in. So again, here's the recipe being used in order to fulfill that which the Gemara said, which means again, it's the charoset is not just something which is random, go put or do anything that you want, no. There's something we need to accomplish over here. We need the ingredients to have a certain type of taste, and then we need the form afterwards, which will be look like mortar, in order to communicate something. So it's, again, this combination of these two elements. And that's what Abaye told us. That was his conclusion, saying that those were not an argument. One was what goes in it, and the other is what is it supposed to look like afterwards. Umilta de'it bekihuye, and something which has within it this element which will make it tart, or chamutz. Okay, let's go now to, on page 3, we want to look at the Rambam in source number 13. Now, what the Rambam is going to do is, in one chapter, Perek Zion, he's going to describe what it is we need to do, and then in chapter 8, which is source 15, he's going to go and tell us how to do it. And so it's the charoset mitzvah midivrei sofrim. Now that itself is fascinating because he says, oh, this is rabbinic mitzvah. There are those who will question on the Rambam, especially source number 14, the Tosfot Yom Tov, that if according to the Rambam it's a mitzvah, the Rambam said it's a mitzvah, then you need to make a bracha. So how could the Rambam say it's a mitzvah and he doesn't have the bracha afterwards? So what's going on with that? Hacharosa mitzvah divrei sofrim zechir letit, shahayu ovdim bo mitzrayim. V'ketzet osanota, how do you make it? Lochim tmarim. Ogrogrot, otzimukim, ukiyotzebem, vidursinotam, vidunlatochen chomets. Here you have the chomets. You put inside it vinegar, is added in, umitablinotam, bitavlin kamotit bitevin. And then you put things in that will look like the ingredients that would go inside of making the mortar. And then you bring it to the table. The Tosfot Yontif over here will add, again, the main reason I brought him was for the second paragraph when he questions, you know, what's it doing? And at the end, he comes up with an answer. And his answer is Lafisha hu tafil amar, that you have a principle, and it goes back to our brachot B, problems and questions and answers, is that there's a thing which is called ikar v'tafil, that when you eat two things which are together, you make the brach on the main part, not on the secondary part. So he says, of course you don't make a brach on the charoset, because the charoset is secondary, it's not main. But that's not necessarily true, because the principle of ikar v'tafel is true when by the laws of brachot. The question is it true in the laws of mitzvot? Which means I can say the same thing. I want to go back again. During the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we ate together the Pesach Matzah and Mar. So you're going to say there was no mitzvah to eat Mar, so therefore, because it's tafel to the Korban Pesach, it's tafel to the Matzah, so you didn't make a brach on the Mar. You didn't make a bracha. Again, this point of using Iker and Tafel as a solution, which is a Hilchot Brachot solution to a Birchot HaMitzvah problem is not as simple as it sounds. But then again, he wants to defend the Rambam, who otherwise is potentially contradicting himself, albeit contradicting himself between a book that he wrote when he was in his 20s and a book that he wrote in his 50s. So maybe, and there are hundreds of places that he contradicts himself between the two books. So to what extent you need to defend, I don't know, but listen, it's nice, it's admirable. But he does say something else along the way. He says that, and that's towards the beginning, he writes, that the word, the top line, he ends the line, he goes, Hashem nekrezeh charoset milashon cheres. That the charoset reminds us of the cheres, because it's like the mortar, it's like the things that they're building, and therefore it should remind us of cheres. So that's what the word charoset comes from, which is actually one of the things that I thought from the very beginning. What does the word charoset mean? Now, the Rambam in source 15, who describes now what it is that you do, he starts off and you bring on the table the matzah, you bring the maror and the matzah and the charoset and the korban pesach, and you bring them all. Take a little bit of the yerek and you dip it in the charoset. Now again, that's not what we do, and we know that there are other customs on that. Halacha vav over here, he says that you... And by the way, he's going to constantly go back and forth between what we do today and what they did when they had the Korban Pesach. So he's going to play with that a lot. But over here, you dipped the yerek in the charoset, and then you made a bracha on the motzi. He actually has what we would call zeich lemikdash kehillel first, eating them all together first, and then afterwards coming back to them separately. And he tells us, you know, people do it in different ways. But what's interesting over here is when he you take the matzah and the mor together, you dip it in the charoset, which makes a great deal of sense. And then, and he says, you make a bracha. He said, meaning that he has eating the two together, so you make one bracha of achilat matzah and mor. Okay? The imachal matzah b'pnei atzma, umor b'pnei atzma, v'varich al zeh b'pnei atzma, v'zeh b'nei atzma. But if you eat it separately, then he's making it. And I'm going to say it again, this whole problem with the brachot is added. We're skipping, and we're going to halacha chet. B'zman hazeh she'ein shem korban acher, shem v'varich ha-motzi, lechem choz v'varich al-chila matzah, umetabel matzah b'charoset v'ochel. Now, he just said, we don't have the korban pesach, we start with the matzah, you take the matzah, dip it in the charoset. What are you talking about? By the way, remember we had a problem that Tosa brought up? How can you dip the maror in the charoset? You're diluting it. And I went to this whole explanation. It's Darabonim. That's the takana. That's how you do it. I don't know what Tosa would do with the Rambam over here, because the matzah is a mitzvah. And he said, you dip that in the charoset, so that the world is going on. I will point out, again, an attempt to try to understand all this. I will point out that according to the Rambam, unlike most, how many matzot do you have? Most of us have three. You have three. Why do you have three? Because you're going to break one in half, and you need two shlemot, like we have by every Shabbat or holiday. So if you break one, you're still going to have two and a half. You're going to have one. You're going to have the two whole ones. The Rambam says, no, this is lechem oni. And if it's lechem oni, a poor person eats crumbled bread. They don't have two whole ones. So on Pesach, he doesn't start with three. He starts with two. You break one, you're left with one and a half, which means the matzah is lechem oni. You want to actually read where he says that? Look at in the middle of Halacha Vav, he writes, "Umneze ein mavarich l'shtek karot kishar yomintom mishum shenemar lechem oni mar darko shel ani b'prusa afkan b'prusa." So therefore, you don't have. So therefore, for the Rambam, the matzah is broken matzah because it represents in its essence being broken. So to dip it into charoset, which for him represents slavery, may make a lot of sense, because just like it was really easy for me to explain how the maror and the charoset can go together, for the Rambam, the matzah is also an expression of being broken and being enslaved and being poor. So therefore, to go with the charoset, at least, you know, I'm saying using the theology behind it, becomes something really interesting. He doesn't say that word for word, but I'm stuck. How in the world do I understand why the Rambam is saying to dip the matzah in the charoset? Our whole explanation of the bugs and the kapah and the eris and all that, where we saw Rashi and Tosfot go, they like that part of it. The Rambam sees this as part of the narrative. And the Rambam says it's a mitzvah midrabanan to do this, because this is part of the story. So it's representative. So it is very interesting how the Rambam is using this. And he does say along the way, you dip it in and then you shake it off. And again, I'm reading from the end of Halacha. He's talking about the maror. You don't saturate it with it, you dip it in. There's a mitzvah to divrei sofrim. And again, he tells him. Then he says, then you wrap them all together. V'chos v'korach matzomar u'mitabel b'charoset. V'ochlin b'lo bracha zech l'mikdash. Then you do and you eat it again. Now, I've worked fairly hard to give you a whole explanation of what this is all about. I do want to point out that there is another bunch of things to say about this, and obviously we're going to run out of time. But first, let's look at Tosfot in Source 16, because now he's going to take us in a different direction. And on that line, that you need to have it both tart, and it needs to be thick and tart. L'samuchi v'lekahuye uv'Yerushalmi amar it ta'avdi zecher l'dam. He says that you also need to add in another element, and that is red wine, in order to make it remember. It should be a memorial for the blood. That means that this should remind us. You know, it's not just that we dip the wine and no, this should remind us of the blood. Then he adds, "Uvtshuvat ha'gaonim afresh lasot charoset beperot shenidma leKnesset Yisrael b'shir hashirim." And he goes, "Go and look in Shir hashirim, and all the various fruits and things which are the Jews are compared to, and you have the tapuach and the pelach harimon and the te'ina and so on, and the tamar and the egos and the shaked, all the things that Am Yisrael is compared to in Shir hashirim." Because what is Shir hashirim? It's a love story. Shir HaShirim is something which is appropriate for Pesach. Shir HaShirim is a love story between God and the Jewish people, and therefore the Charoset, to a certain extent, actually represents this. Now, then Tosfot ends up saying, but if this is the case that we concluded that we need to do both, then it must be that the Halacha is really like Elazar ben Tzadok. And that's what Tosfot's right. Tagui Charosh Yerushalayim, the people in Jerusalem used to yell out, by the way, I don't know if he realizes this, that they would say this, but that's him, right? He says this is what, like, we would do. And he says, Mashma de lach v'lozman tzadok. If that's the case, that's what people would do. And I guess the law really is like v'lozman tzadok. I'll just say that that's interesting. The Yerushalmi that he was referring to is in source number 17. We're not going to read the whole thing, but we'll read the very end, that it needs to be thick. It needs to be, remind us of the mortar. And the last thing is that we also need an element of it, that it reminds us of the blood, that there needs to be this other element in it as well. I want to get back to the tapuach for a second. One is Tosfos, first of all, Alei Tamar in source 18. He tells us that Tosfos is going to tell us, and the Tosfos is, I left a number out, it's at the very bottom of the Alei Tamar. It's talking about a certain fruit, and Rabbeinu Tam says, Umafarish de tapuach hainu etrog. He says, in the language of Chazal, whenever they would say tapuach, tapuach did not mean apple. There's a lot to talk about here in terms of languages and how things were understood. And I know that some of you also do want to go back to the Garden of Eden and the apple and so on, is that part of the problem is a generic term for fruit or versus a particular fruit. And what Rabbeinu Tam is saying is that no, when Chazal say tapuach, what they really mean is etrog, which means we've gone from apple to citrus. The Alei Tamar then points out, if that's the case, then when it says zecher le tapuach, and you need to put tapuach inside, therefore your recipe really should have citrus. Which brings us back to the problem of who actually had citrus in various places. But this is Rabbeinu Tam, you know, talking about, and he doesn't, I don't know if Rabbeinu Tam had that much citrus. They did have citrus there? Okay, so it's interesting that he's understanding citrus, and therefore you have people over here now insisting that what you need to add to this is that you need to add citrus, because that's what it means. Now again, how authoritative this in terms of, the Rabbeinu Tam didn't say this about the Charoset. He said this on a general level, that's what tapuach means, and it's later authority saying, oh, that's what tapuach, and you have to put tapuach, so therefore it means that you put citrus. I don't know how many of you actually have a long-standing family custom of adding citrus in as well. Part of the reason he says this is based upon the Targum in source number 19. The Torah Tamim is going to point out that he doesn't know where that Targum is that was quoted. But he'll say that maybe there's a similar one, and that's that whole footnote on the bottom of the page, which we can now skip. I do want to get back. There's two more things I want to do, and we are rapidly running out of time. One, in source number 21, Charoset, in another Mishnah, minding its own business, finds Charoset. It says, Einot nim kemach letoch Charoset, or ha-Charoset, o letoch ha-Chardal. On Pesach, don't put any flour into the Charoset. Now, you all knew that. You know why you shouldn't put flour into Charoset? Exactly. So it says, don't do that. By the way, also chardal. Now, what is the context? What are we talking about? What are they doing over here? So to save you a lot of time, this charoset is here for a whole different reason. If you look in source 23, charoset, hu mashke chamutz, now notice again, it has to have that chamutzness, asui l'tabel bo habasar. This was what they dipped the Korban Pesach into when they ate. This was their ketchup. This was their barbecue sauce. That the charoset was what they dipped it in for flavor. If you look, umetablin and samach gimel there in Tver Israel, b'shar achilato, uvacharoset v'chardel v'nakar akadine Pesach, midairi lei b'charoset v'chardel shasui lahatpil b'hen b'pesach, that they would dip it in. And now I wonder if, according to the Rambam, when we're doing, you know, the Pesach matzah more, or even the matzah, you dip it in. If the matzah replaces the Korban Pesach you would eat together, right, with the charoset. So maybe it makes a great deal of sense to be eating the matzah together with the charoset. Again, especially that matzah which is supposed to be together with the Korban Pesach. So we still dip in the charoset because that's how they ate the Korban Pesach. And I'm just going to say this requires a lot more thinking and a lot more analysis. But again, I don't want to ignore, there's another Mishnah here that talks about charoset in the context of the eating of the Korban Pesach, which I think is important. Fine. In source number 25, we're told the charoset should be made thick. The Shulchan Aruch, v'charoset yaseh av zecher letit, v'achokach nonim bo ma'at chometz o yayin adom zecher ledam. So again, he's going with the chometz, with the bitterness. He's going with the wine, and the wine apparently should be red. V'osina charoset mi peirot shem shomim Yisrael, which we saw before quoted by Tosfot, which is from the Gaonim. In source number 26, when the Shulchan Aruch says, and when you have the four cups of wine generally, what wine should be on the table? You should have red wine. And then you have the Taz pointing out, yeah, have red wine, except during the blood libels, because you don't want anything red on your table. And he says, V'ha'idna, nimnu milakach yayin adom, b'bnei alilot shkarim, v'avonateinu harabim. Because of the terrible situations that we live in, we don't use red wine anymore. We're not giving anybody excuses over here. And that's really interesting because on the one hand, now the charoset, I'm just saying that there's this other part of Jewish history. Again, it's enough to represent the pain and suffering of the past and look at the fear of the pain and suffering in the present that they're talking about. And all that's included in the charoset. I do want to get to one last element, and that was the apple, which has been hiding in plain sight the whole time. Rashi and the Rif both quoted this verse, which I just have to wonder if it was actually in a text of the Gemara. He writes, Mizot ola min amidbar, mitrapeket al doda, tachat atapuach, and so on. I'm going to read to you in English that line. Who is she that comes up from the desert, leaning upon her beloved? Under the apple tree I roused you. It was there your mother conceived you. There she who bore you conceived you. So the reason I couldn't do this earlier is because some of you were still too young at that point. I had to wait to get to a little bit more maturity on your part. That's from Shir HaShirim. Yeah, which means that something really interesting happened under the apple tree, and that's what we're trying to remember over here. So let's now try to figure all of this out. Rashi in Shmot, under the verse dealing with the mirrors, if you remember the copper mirrors, those mirrors that Moshe didn't want to accept, and God says, no, you should accept it, Rashi over there quotes the same verse. And he quotes the same story. And the truth is that all of this is based upon the Gemara in Source 32. The Rav Bartanur in 31 is going to tell us that all of this is about seduction. And essentially what he's telling us is that the Jews were slaves and they would go out to work and they would be exhausted. And then their wives came out, some of the version of the stories, with food, sometimes with fish. We're back to the sushi again now. Sometimes with other things. But they would come out and they would seduce their husbands. And that's what happened under the apple tree. So according to, and Rashi, by the way, says this in the Gemara as well, which means that the reason that we're doing this is to remember this. First of all, I want to call this dedication for Jewish continuity. Generally, when you talk about programs for Jewish continuity, you talk about Jewish identity. You don't talk about actually Jewish continuity in its most, shall we say, most basic, but in its most basic, undelicate sense. But that becomes really interesting, because this is actually the context of where Rashi calls them, these are the Nashim Tzadkaniyot. So now, if the whole story of leaving Egypt is about the Nashim Tzadkaniyot, that's really the basis of it, where does that get played out in the Haggadah? Where does it get played on Pesach night? According to Rashi, it gets played out with the Charoset. The Charoset having the apples in it represents the apple tree. And by the way, any of you who now want to go to the original tree, which brings lust, which brings this desire, which is this tree of knowledge, I don't think that the whole Etrog and the apple debate which took place is so far from it, because it's the same debate that all of you know regarding what was that apple, what was that fruit back there. But it's the fruit of desire, and what they were doing was trying to bring desire. And I want to explain this a little bit, because there's a couple of levels to it. One is that a slave very often feels complete isolation from the world. A slave feels lost, a slave feels undeserving, a slave feels this inability to have any kinds of relationships. And over here, the women go out and says, no, you're somebody who I find desirable, which actually means that they need a bit of vulnerability to be able to go out and to do that. And they went out and tried to seduce these men. Now, some of us say, well, listen, that's not holy, that we don't need to talk about this. No, that makes its way into the Beit HaMikdash, which is exactly Rashi's point. There's something which is very holy about this, because we continue as a people because of those who had hope for the people. But then the apple, and I'm going to say it again, I skipped over the Rashi in the Gemara. Look back at source number 10, where he says, Zeich l'tapuach, shayu yoldot b'neihem sham below etzev, shalei akiru b'hem mitzrim, dechtiv tachat ha-tapuach, under the apple tree is where I woke you up, is where I seduced you, is where all of this takes place, which is, Rashi says this very briefly over here, but as I said, if you know this longer Rashi on the Pasuk in the Torah, you realize that there's something else over here. But I think that there's a deeper level to all of this. So now, again, now you realize that there is, you can share this by your seders, don't blame me, blame Rashi, that there's an erotic element to the charoset, which is, now you can begin to talk about the charoset also as an aphrodisiac and so on, which is there, and which is really now you are, I understand, which represents this sensuality, and it represents the continuity, and it represents the belief in the future, and it's saying to this slave, no, you're somebody of significance, and you can be loved, and you can love, and we can then continue. But I just want to stress, all of this I think is real, but I think there's also a metaphoric level to it as well, because there's another Rashi. Right, all of this I did with Rashi. I hope you appreciate. The last Rashi I want to quote today, source 33. Rashi, on that Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, when he talks about under the apple tree and love and lust and so on, Kach yomeret b'vakasha chiba doda tachat ha-tapuach oraticha zachor b'tachtit har Sinai asu aroshe kemin tapuach sham oratech v'ulo shon chiba eshet n'urim ha-mureret et doda b'leilot Bitnumot alei mishkav bechabagato v'nashkato. So the Rashi is using all of those erotic terminologies to explain the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And he says that all of this gets played out at Sinai as well, which means we first need to see ourselves as significant and important as individuals, and then as a nation we can feel that we're significant, that God has chosen us. Which means part of leaving Egypt is to arrive at Sinai. Part of leaving Egypt is God proverbially reaches out his hand and takes the damsel in distress outside, and God says, I love you. But in order to be loved, you need to feel that somebody can love you. You need to have a little bit of self-respect. The building blocks of that is each individual be able to feel this. And the apples over here are representing, and now it's very, very different. And just look at all the places we went to with the charoset. We have this practical, we have to get rid of the bugs, or we have to get rid of the spice, and we have to get rid of the sting. And maybe that's a part of the story as well. We need to get rid of the sting. We need to get rid of the danger. And we moved over to this other part of it, is that, no, this should cause us to remember the building blocks and represent the actual slavery, and therefore it goes very well with maror, and maybe even goes very well with matzah. On the other hand, now we realize that actually they would dip the Korban Pesach into this before they would eat the Korban Pesach, which means that there's this whole other level to this which represents that God passed over. But why did God pass over? God passed over, and that was itself a declaration of love. And then we realize that the apple over here, that one of the things that Chazal will tell us, oh, no, this should remind you of the apple. But what's the apple have to do with the story? Well, the apples, the Nashim Tzadkaniyot, who went and seduced their husbands under the apple tree. And now you know that why you never heard this as a kid by the Seder, because either they didn't know it or nobody wanted to say this out loud. But there's this other level of the Charoset, which then represents this erotic gesture, because there you were conceived. I don't know how many of you are going to go over to your kids and say, listen, oh, by the way, you were conceived over here, right? See that apple tree over there? That's where it happened. That's where it happened. And now you realize that there's something incredible about this. But what it really is a statement of again, this little unit of two people feeling love, becoming something so much bigger than two lonely individuals. But that ends up, according to Rashi, then taking us to Har Sinai, and then being able to feel that we deserve the love of God. And that takes the relationship, as they like to say, to a whole different level. Chag kasher v'sameach, and enjoy your charoset.